I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com. Today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome Doris Kearns Goodwin, the executive producer of Washington. Ms. Goodwin is a world-renowned presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning author of many presidential biographies, including Lyndon Johnson and the American Dream, The Fitzgeralds and the Kennedys, and Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln. Over the next segment, Doris Kearns Goodwin will talk about Washington, a three-night documentary miniseries chronicling the life and career of our nation's first president, which premieres Sunday, February 16th at 8 p.m. on History. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to cross the Delaware, feel free to take a three-day weekend as we declare our independence from the present in order to visit a revolutionary past. Doris, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
I'm glad to be with you and to go back in time.
Now, you're the executive producer of Washington, a three-night documentary miniseries which premieres President's Day weekend, Sunday, February 16th at 8 p.m. on History. Now, Doris, tell us what Washington, the miniseries, both explores and reveals.
Well, what was such an adventure for me about working on this is that I didn't know George Washington like I knew my other guys, Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt and Teddy Roosevelt and LBJ, and I always wanted to know more about him, but so many books had been written about him, I wasn't sure how I could contribute in that way. So when History approached me to do this miniseries, it seemed like it was just the way to get at George Washington, because it doesn't start with him as a monument. He's not an icon already. It starts with him when he's a young soldier at 22 years old, conducting a mission that is going to screw up. He'll make mistakes. It'll descend into chaos, and he's going to have to learn from those mistakes. It also goes back to when he's 11 years old and his father dies, which prevents him from going to any formal schooling like his half-brothers had, and he always missed the chance to go to school in London as they did. So you feel a vulnerable person who grows through office and grows through war. As General Powell said, his experience was war rather than schooling. And once you see people dying when you're only 22 in the thousands, somehow you're never the same. It's no longer a romantic adventure. So you watch him grow, and that to me is the excitement of it. It's an arc that you see in the entire six hours. That would be long if it was a six-year thing on him.
So you mentioned he made his share of mistakes. What were some of the critical mistakes that Washington made?
Well, the most surprising one is early on, he's on a mission to get the French, who are near a fort, Duquesne, to leave there and leave in peace. And he encounters an Indian group led by a famous Indian called the Half Indian, who tells him that the French are actually coming toward him as a British soldier, and that they have bad intentions, and they are ready to fight. And he's hesitant about whether he should be fighting with them because he was supposed to be bringing a peaceful mission, but he's convinced that he has to do it. The fight ensues. They are killed. And indeed, the man who is carrying the mission document to say we want peace is killed by the Indian. And so all of a sudden, what George Washington is supposed to do has spinned into, as I say, this terrible chaos. And he has to figure out what to do, and he goes back, and he just doesn't even accept that what has been done is right, that he wasn't sure what he was doing. And I think it forever changed him to make such a huge mistake so early on, and then to be hurt for it, and then somehow he rises above it. But I think once you have that adversity when you're young, and if you get wisdom from it, you learn very quickly.
So ultimately, how did he go from being a leader to becoming a great leader?
That's a wonderful question. I think, you know, early on, he had ambition for himself, as many young people do. He wanted to rise in the ranks of the British soldiers, and he was willing to do things to make that necessary. And then at a certain point, when he becomes the leader of the revolution, and he has the responsibility not just for the soldiers, but for the country. You know, the country would not have been created had that revolution not been won. And then suddenly he starts thinking more about the soldiers' welfare than his own. He shares their limited rations when he's at Valley Forge. He begins to get a vision about how the battle should be won. He begins to know when he's president that he has this extraordinary responsibility. He's very anxious when he goes to the presidency. He writes a letter to his friend on his way to his first inaugural saying, "I feel like I'm going to my execution." He felt like the whole thing could fall apart and his reputation would be destroyed all over again instead of having been built up. And he makes those decisions knowing that everything he does is setting a precedent, and he cares more and more about the country as time goes by, and then he becomes the monument that we know. So that's the dramatic arc that I think you watch, and that's what human people do. They grow, they get better, they learn from experience, they make mistakes, they suffer adversity. So that's what I think hopefully makes him a character in this that we can identify with.
Well, speaking of experience, he was a brilliant military strategist. Was that based on experience or an innate knowing of what to do?
I think there was a certain kind of innate understanding when they would be playing with, you know, maps and looking at, you know, toy soldiers being put on a map. You see that. He could see where we had to go, and he understood the need for taking initiative in battle several times. There's one time when he's a young guy and he goes to Philadelphia to talk to the head of the British command to say, unless we take an aggression against Fort Duquesne, this war is never going to be won. And he's right. They finally do it a year later. But the fact that he went as a junior officer to tell the top guy who doesn't listen to him shows that he had a vision of what should be, as well as the experience of having been in more battles than most of the people were because he'd been in that French and Indian War for so many years.
Now, I'm intrigued by his mother, Mary. Tell us about George's mother, Mary. How much of her influence helped form his strength and character?
Oh, I think that's huge. In fact, interestingly, President Clinton, who's in the miniseries, talks about the importance of the mother. She was a single mother, which Clinton knows something about. He said he thought that she was tough and made him not have time to just putter around. She taught him how to grow the crops. He learned surveying when he was 14 years old. He bought his own land when he was 17.
Wow.
He became somewhat of an independent streak as a result of that experience. And I think it set him off on a more mature path than even his two half-brothers would have had, who had had a more easy upbringing, going to London, going to school, and then eventually going out on their own. George is really out on his own at the age of 11, and that shaped him forevermore, I think.
Now, of course, after the Revolutionary War, Washington could have had all the power he wanted, yet he didn't take it. Why is that?
Yeah, the great comment that General Powell makes is, again and again, he could have been a king. You know, when you win that Revolutionary War, the tradition was that then you take over the government and you run it. But he took off his uniform. In fact, there's a scene of him deliberately doing that and resigning his commission and going back to Mount Vernon and then being called to become the President of the United States. And then after two terms, deciding it's time for me to go back home again. He could have stayed for third, fourth, fifth terms. They would have probably kept him on his life, and it would have changed the whole power dynamics of what our presidency was. Everything he did set a precedent. He had to decide, do I shake hands with people? Do I have dinner with them? Do I go to their houses? How often do I see them? What's my title going to be? Some people thought it should be His Mightiness instead of President. Adams thought it was terrible that it was just President, that that was Presidents of Gardens Clubs and it had no dignity. And most importantly, he leaves a warning to us when he's leaving office in this famous farewell address about the spirit of party, the baneful effect of the spirits of party and revenge and sectionalism and the importance of retaining that sense of common citizenry above partisan identity, which could not be more relevant today.
So for you personally, what has your experience been like as executive producer of Washington?
Well, I not only learned the whole process of going from a writer's block and a writer's desk, you know, to filling out who would be helping to write the story, to getting the people to do the interviews, and then seeing how they put the interviews together and string them together so they tell a story, and then the filming being done in Romania, and then characters come back with the actors. The whole process was, I've been involved in them in a certain way with the Lincoln movie with Spielberg. But yet, this was a hands-on process. So I think the end result of the experience was that by collaborating with so many wonderful people, it shortened the time zone. It usually takes me 10 years to write a book. And because everybody was working together, it was 18 months. I can't believe that this film gets done in 18 months. But that's even long, I guess, or short for some films. So, and the end was that I feel connected to George. I never had felt an emotional connection to him. I always wanted to, but somehow by working with this and watching him grow, and when he finally dies, I felt a sense of sadness, as I did for all my other guys whom I'd lived with for 10 years. So it really was an adventure that I'm very grateful to have had.
Well, Doris, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
I would love to be catapulted back to you anytime.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time.